Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes, you probably don't recognize me because I don't have a beard and I cut my hair. So, and I'm a little younger than I was last time we talked.
You look younger than you used to, yeah.
Yep. But let's talk about the second part of Midnight Mass. So for those of you who haven't heard our previous episode, number 341, we talked about episodes 1 through 4. And it was fun because I had seen it all, and Hannah and Julie had some speculation, and that was, I just loved it. It was fun. You were right on a lot of it. But yeah, so over there we've got Julie and Hannah, and welcome.
Yes, thank you so much. Let's get into it. Riley was getting stomped the last time we saw him, and then he burst into flame.
That's right. Which happens.
No, that was until the end of the episode, though.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a good one. I liked that episode quite a bit. When
It was really good.
Yeah. When he came out, you know, we knew that he had been bitten and all that. And when he showed up at Aaron's door, that was pretty cool. Because you were, at that point, we were like, okay, what is he going to do? Yeah.
And what I liked even more than that, though, I mean, because, yes, when they're on the boat, you're just like, and she's like, I'm not afraid of you. I'm just not afraid of you.
Yeah. I'm like, I love that she just spelled it out, though. She's like, okay, so you just told me that, and we're out here where I can't get away from you, so.
But I'm still not afraid of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, but she kind of reaches her hand out, and I'm like, oh, no, don't touch him. And she doesn't. She puts her hand back in her lap, you know. But, yeah, because then he was being very Christ-like, and he says, oh, no, I did it so I couldn't run away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, oh, this is that prophetic dream he had,
mm-hmm.
where it's always just before the dawn and he wakes up. And it was beautiful because he woke up into heaven, basically.
Right, and he said, I'm not as strong as you.
Yeah.
Like, I have to do this, but when you see more of the show, you see how strong he was. Nobody else could, almost nobody else in the town could restrain themselves that way.
But his parents could.
I know.
And I loved that you could see this is where he got his strength. He learned it from them, even though they were in conflict a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But you also see this episode is where you're like, oh, no. Father Paul has lost it.
Oh.
He is justifying. Bev is like, this is a good thing. I mean, speaking of her being a cult leader, she's like, this is a good thing. I'm going to get in on it from the ground floor.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I really loved is, I mean, I was sitting there just being outraged by Father Paul, who's just twisting. He is just twisting fact after fact, just like Bev does.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when, looking back after the end of it, where what you start to see is he and Bev are both very similar. Both of them want to control things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to trust God. They don't want to let anyone else have any choice in what they want to do. And
they think that if they feel that something is good, then it is.
Yeah. And they trust a conscience, which is ill-formed.
Yeah.
Right. And I did feel a few times, you know, we know that Father Paul eventually realized what he had done. But there were a few moments before then where you could see his hesitation. And him going,
the farther things got, the farther things got, the more he was sometimes like, oh, wait, is this still good?
Yeah.
But he, you know, when you look at what Riley was turning down, what Father Paul was offering him was, it's fine that you killed that girl.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever have to feel guilty again. I don't feel guilty.
Hmm.
This is a whole new thing, and we don't ever have to feel bad again.
Hmm.
And everything can be great. And the thing is, Riley's already worked through that stuff. Father Paul has not taken accountability for anything he's done so far. And Riley has. He knows that that's not real. And he knows that he could try to live that way, but it would never be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did, Father Paul did pull out the word jealousy from Riley.
That
was an interesting exchange.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you want to have that peace. You don't want to be tortured by what you did, but his is the, but the thing is Paul is all, or not Paul, whoop, Riley is always truthful.
Mm-hmm.
He's always seeking truth.
Yeah.
And so at one point he finally quits talking because he could see he's getting nowhere and he knows what he thinks already.
Yeah.
You know, he's already figured it out. And just the fact that, and Father Paul also, just like Bev, but more gently usually, he can't take opposition. So in this conversation, when he's saying, well, what do you think of that? And he's going, it's disgusting. It's whatever. And, it, you know, the drinking the blood and being a vampire and killing people, all this stuff. And he's like, gross. And he finally's like, I've had it with you, says Father Paul. And he's yelling at him because he's mad. And so finally, Riley does say, I feel jealous. Because you don't feel any guilt, and I feel so much guilt over what I did. But, and he's like, finally. And I'm like, yeah, because you want him to agree with you, because what Riley, you can see from the look on his face, he knows there's the big difference.
Yeah, and when he's like, don't you feel at peace now? Yeah. And Riley's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's like, don't you feel at peace about the whole vampire thing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, now that you've, like, had some blood and you're not hungry anymore, don't you feel at peace now? And he's like, yeah. And you're like, I don't think he does.
Well, and even if he does, he knows that the feeling at peace is in itself a problem.
Yeah.
Because he knows how gross it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things that seemed important to me on this viewing was, how much did Father Paul or Monsignor actually know? Like, when he got attacked over in the Holy Land and then, you know, put him in a box and then came over, I mean, did Father Paul kill anybody on the way over, or was Joe his first? It seemed in the show that Joe was the first, and then, you know, because anything else is just guessing. But everything happened so quickly for everybody on the island, so it makes it a little implausible that he would not have had to feed before then. Because they had a long trip on a boat, right?
The vampire was feeding him, though.
Yeah, I don't think he had killed. I don't think he had killed anybody because he was just feeding from the vampire,
and
he hadn't died yet.
Yeah,
that's why he.
So he didn't know that at the time. Maybe that's what was going to happen. But he was delusional anyway, because he thought it was an angel, right?
No. Yeah, I think he really did think it was an angel until it gets down to the carnage in the church, and he's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And when he talks about, you know, if he's honest with himself, like, what was his real motivation? He just wanted to not die, and he didn't want Sarah and her mom to die.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah and Annie.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, I'm young again. This is great. Because he has always regretted the way he lived his life. And he kept saying he wanted a second chance. Which you don't get. I mean, even if you're young again, you can't undo the past.
There you are.
But that's what you wanted.
Doesn't matter where you go. I mean, monks talk about that. You know, people dream of, you know, this contemplative life where you know, cordon yourself off and you're alone in a cell. But it's like you're there. It's not like yourself is not there with you. And for some, that's a really difficult thing.
Oh, absolutely. What a dream. Alone with my thoughts all the time.
Yeah,
wherever you go, there you are.
That
right?
Sounds, I'm American. That sounds terrible.
Well, and this is, we know he's weak. And we were saying Bev's strong and he's weak. And so we're just seeing the two ways this is expressed by these two people. But his weakness, his real weakness, is he's unable to accept things as they are.
Absolutely.
So later on when he's talking to...
Annie.
Is that the...
The mom's, Sarah's mom's name?
Okay. By then she looked like she was a young girl, and I was really confused the whole time. Rose and I finally figured out who she was. But anyway, when he's talking to her and he's like, I wanted to ask you to to come to you and ask you to leave your husband and Sarah and I could be together.
Well, no, no, that's so interesting too, because he never said he was going to do that. He said he would have left if she had said it.
He wanted her to do it. I knew I had it wrong because once again, he's blaming everyone but himself.
Exactly.
For his own weakness. Because what he should have done is either gone and confessed it and gone somewhere else, or he should have left the priesthood, because he clearly was unsuited to the priesthood from that whole conversation he had with Riley.
Yeah.
That mouse story in itself showed horrible. Everything that was wrong with him as a priest.
Yes, horrible.
Yeah, and absolutely. Then he's like
defending it. He's like, well, it sustained your faith for 10 years? And I'm like, yeah.
But not for a lifetime. I don't know if you're
familiar with Brandy Norwood. Almost doesn't count, my friend.
Yeah.
If it keeps you going for 10 years and then you're like, oh, right, but that was a lie.
Right.
Well, then how are you going to build back from that?
Yeah.
But he thought that was totally fine.
Well, yeah, because he's like, well, you're saying that's God's will. And he's like, wasn't it? Just because I did it. And I'm like, all right, because you know what to do.
He's like, the real miracle is that we did this thing, and it's still a miracle because it's the same thing with the fishes and the loaves when people are like,
oh yeah,
the miracle was that they all shared and
they had bread in their pocket.
Yeah. And it's still a miracle of love. And you're like, well, not really.
No. Well, and because it goes along with the idea that priest's lie contributes to Riley losing his faith. Because Riley's never had a faith that's really grounded in what's true about faith and God, and never had a relationship with God ever in that way. And the same thing is what draws Riley in to be attacked by the vampire. And I love when Father Paul's going, and it was God's will. God wanted you to be this, be here.
He was like, you felt called, right?
Yeah.
You felt a call, and you came to the church. You've never done that before. And he was like,
no.
You know, when I came back, Joe Colley's sister, and he's like, oh, yeah, I did lie. I did lie about
that. But he stops for a second, and he looks off to the side like, crap.
I know. He's like, oh, no. Yeah.
That was a great moment.
Yeah. It wasn't God's will at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was caught in a lie again.
Mm. Again.
I love that viewpoint. Yeah. It's like, you know, I think that's something that it went wrong in Catholicism, you know, with our catechesis for a long period of time was, you know, everything's roses, you know, and people had no basis, you know, the bedrock was not there. They were in the church kind of for the wrong reasons and didn't have a good view of what this is. But I really like that point that, you know, Riley had that too. And,
yeah,
but he still searched.
Well, that's why I like him so much, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, I related. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think, I'm looking for this quote. Hold on. Let's see if I can find it. I guess not. There was a column done by a Baptist minister that my husband and I used to read in our little local newspaper for our neighborhood. And he was talking one time, and it was some big disaster had happened. And so this column was part of, I think, what he had used talking to his congregation also. And he just said, look, Christianity isn't about everything being happy and fun all the time. It's here for the times when things are bad. It's how you get through it. It doesn't make those things go away. We're not protected from those things. And he said, people who think they're going to be protected from anything bad ever happening are the people who wind up sacrificing virgins to volcanoes.
Wow.
And I was like, which is exactly one of the messages of this show.
Yeah, that, you know, this is something that I've heard actually from purely secular sources. But it's so true. It was that discomfort is the price of admission to a life worth living, basically, like a life with any value in it.
Right.
You can't get away from it. You can't have this pathologized wellness where it just means that you're never upset.
Well, yeah, because in fact, I'm just thinking based on what you're saying right now and thinking back to the end of the show where there's poor Howard, some local guy who's not a churchgoer, whose Sturge had turned into a vampire because he was always nice to me and I like him and I want him to have this too. And this is when you see Sturge really is simple and just believing what the people tell him, who he respects.
This poor guy.
I know, but. And then Bev's like, oh, yeah, but you never came to church, but you got the grace, and here you are. And he's like, but I killed my daughter and my wife, and he won't get over it. And then her face just hardens, and she goes, well, and I think then you don't need to come in. There's no room for you. You're not worthy. And I'm like, oh, got it.
Yeah,
it's even, that mentality.
Even worse, he said, he said, you could have saved them.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that was
she was just twisting that, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. She's like, well, if you had come to Mass, you would know that. And he's like, I didn't come to Mass. What is going on?
Yeah. And that was the thing about the priest wanting to keep everybody inside and instruct them. And Bev just going, open the doors, let them all out, you know, because she wanted the carnage.
Right. And Annie did the only sane thing and shot the priest.
Yeah.
And yeah, like this is what happens.
Aaron.
Annie. Sarah's mom, I thought.
Well, Sarah, no? Let's see. Annie is Annie Flynn.
No, because Annie did it because then the vampire came and grabbed her and took her out of the church.
Yeah. Mildred is Sarah's mom. I'm looking at the cast right here. Mildred Gunning and Dr. Sarah Gunning. And Annie Flynn is
Riley's gun. Mom. I was like, at what point?
Yeah.
It got a little chaotic.
Right.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mildred, she gets swept away by the vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. So we definitely need to talk about Riley's death. We mentioned it, that, you know, he was in flames. But the sacrifice that he made, we mentioned that. But it was interesting that they almost, you know, him and Aaron almost swapped places again, you know, because his death... I mean, he got to see the person that he killed who reached out to him, you know, and said, come, right? That was beautiful. And then Aaron kind of went into the Adams and now I'm part of the world thing, you know, which just removes the meaning from every single thing that could ever happen.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what is the point of good or bad or anything like that?
Which is interesting because that goes against everything that she just did.
Yeah.
Well, and when it ended with I am that I am, I was like, okay, I don't want to suddenly get so Catholic, but that's blasphemous. You're saying you're God because you're part of all creation. And I was like, okay, this is what happened. I don't know, Scott, if you watched all of The Good Place.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so remember the end of The Good Place. This is what they did with that. It was done by people who didn't have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And they just went, we don't know what to do because we can't come up with an ending that's good enough. So we're going to say dissolving into the ocean, which is what The Good Place likened it to, or this, I'm the light between the atoms, the electricity and everything, is wonderful. And I'm like, I did listen, as I mentioned last time, to that Catholic Answers Focus that had
Joe Heschman. Oh, I did too. Yeah, thanks for pointing us to that.
Yeah, me too.
And so one of the things I liked, it was really good, and one of the things I liked about it was Joe Heschmeyer, who also I think likes this director, because he's watched a bunch of it. And he said, the problem is that this director has a hard time writing conclusions.
Which is so common in horror.
Just like Stephen King.
I was going to say.
Yeah, because you have to take a choice, black or white, and they want to go in that nice area.
Mm-hmm.
But he said his shows tend to end with a character giving a monologue with the director's point of view, even if it's a complete betrayal of the character themselves.
Mm. Yes.
And that's exactly what happened.
And that's what this was. So the three times that people... So I listened to a podcast.
Okay.
It was an hour and a half interview with Mike Flanagan about Midnight Mass.
Okay.
Nice.
It's a podcast that I had never heard of before. It's called Script Away.
Oh, okay.
And they also focus a lot on like what changed in the writing process. So if you're interested in that, you should look it up because they have a ton of episodes with like a ton of big names, big movies and shows.
Yeah.
So the three times that someone gives monologues about death, the first one is what he thought when he was an angry atheist in his 20s.
So it'd be Riley's, right?
Riley's. Mm-hmm. The second one was his most idealized version of when he was a kid, still Catholic.
Okay.
Aaron's. And then the third one, which is Aaron at the end, is what he feels now, which is what everybody could tell.
Which is also what Riley said before. It was just expounded upon.
No, it's not that different. It's really not. It's
the same thing.
It's more spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hang on. In the way that people use the word secularly.
Mm-hmm. No, I know.
And
I
then
know.
He was like, I really like Carl Sagan. And I was like, wow, really? I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
And as far as the monologues go, he brought that up.
Did he?
He was like, I had director friends who were like, how did you get away with 9 minutes of people talking about how they think they're going to die? Well, I could never do that. And he's like, honestly, I don't know how we got away with all the monologues in this. He said, one thing that happened is COVID lockdown happened 2 weeks before we started shooting.
Oh.
Mm.
And Netflix changed leadership.
Okay.
So he thinks that's how they got away with it. But in his next show, Midnight Mass for Netflix, they were like, no monologues, no monologues. So, yeah.
No, you said
that's,
Midnight.
That's awesome. And I still like that aspect of the show a lot. You know, it's kind of like a theatrical production. You know, there's a lot of plays that are people sitting around talking like this.
I don't have as much of a problem with it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really the worst one was the one at the end. When I was like, I was
gay.
Yeah, I'm not saying I agree with all of them, but I found them interesting.
Well, here's the thing. I think about To Be or Not to Be. Hamlet is not, it's a monologue, but he's making points the whole way through that are different or logical conclusions. He's not basically kind of just expounding on the same thing over and over.
Well, and also I would say that Hamlet is moving the story forward too, even though he's monologuing. The story is moving forward through what he's saying. And that's not so much the case in some of the things that we had here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I did kind of like the monologuing was the priest trying to talk, and it wasn't exactly monologuing, but it was all woven through it, was trying to talk Riley into, this is a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was going on, and that's when you get the story about the mouse and get the stories about the waterfall. No, wait, that was with the girlfriend, mother of the child. But the thing was, is he would do those kind of monologues and you're like, okay, at least this is giving me some more insight into your character. Those other things were just, it was just a long blah, blah, blah on one thing. And it wasn't really moving. They could have done it in half the time. I would have given them half the time. And this is how you feel. Get it.
So it kind of comes from, I think, also what this project was for him. So he's been writing this for like 10 years. And when he started, he was not even sober yet. So he's an alcoholic. He's a recovering alcoholic.
Which is part of what's going on here,
And he was like, it's so weird because I was writing about this and I wasn't even sober. Like, I had no idea what I was talking about. But he was also kind of an angry atheist when he started writing this. So the original idea was, it's faith versus reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, no, it's not that, because it's really about how you believe. And so that's why there's like Bev, but there's also Riley's parents, and the sheriff. So he said it morphed more into that. And that's also part of why Riley died in the boat. Originally, it was going to be Aaron.
He was going to kill her.
No, that she. The same thing happened to her. Just switched.
Okay.
And she killed herself.
Okay.
To prove to Riley, because Riley was a skeptic and was never going to believe it. And then they were like, "Well, no, I think it needs to be Riley." And he was like, and you know, I'm not Riley anymore. When I started writing him 10 years ago, that was me. And I wasn't as connected to it anymore. So it didn't matter as much. And then Aaron was the one who carried it to the end. But I think that's part of why all of those monologues are in there, because this story is so personal to him.
He's so close
to it. He's so close to it, and it's about how his own views have evolved. I mean, it started about just what they were, and then about how they've evolved. So, well, yeah.
Mm. So you talk about being by yourself a lot and just thinking your own thoughts, and maybe you have too many inner monologues, possibly. Because here's my thing. I feel like this whole series is a hot mess, and that's why.
How dare you?
I'm sorry, and I know I'm in the minority and everything, but the thing is I liked the last episodes. I liked a lot of the things that happened. I liked a lot of the themes I saw, but it was so, to me, unfocused, back and forth, and you didn't get, I mean, and you got things like, well, maybe it's a, you know, virus, or your blood has changed, and blah, 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 and the light and everything. And I'm just like, this is just so, we've seen it all before, and it's okay if we've seen it all before. But for me, he didn't do anything that was new enough or focused enough to give you a real conclusion. And so to me, look, Christopher Nolan took 10 years to write Inception. Stephen King, while he was an addict, wrote The Shining. And also, I think, The Stand. And he was truer to most...
That's a problem. Well, he shouldn't have stopped.
Well, there you go. But most of the stuff that even Stephen King wrote, he wasn't always right, like with Salem's Lot, where he was doing a few things for the sake of the story. But he always was respectful to the basic underpinning of believing in God and Christianity and The Stand. He never went against that, other than here's the bad guy and here's what he's doing, because he was interested in a lot of other things. But he was willing to take it for its own terms and not twist it around. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This guy spent a lot of time twisting things around so he could have his good monologue or his whatever it was. And it left me with a lot of fluff, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't feel like I had a lot of fluff. I do feel like, because I feel like Riley was pretty accurate for that kind of person.
I liked Riley.
But the thing with Aaron at the end, I mean, that was just, for me, that's the same as when Rose is like, I love the movie Repo Men. I just turn it off 5 minutes before it ends.
Well, and for me, but so then think about the sheriff. The sheriff's there. Here's a wonderful example that you've got set up to do a lot of interesting things with.
He was wasted.
And what does he do? Yeah, he was totally wasted. I love you, son, and we already believe in God. Mm-hmm. And the one monologue he gets, I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, you're allowed to have this monologue. It states who you are. We've already heard examples of this many times, so we don't need all the details, but it's in the wrong place. That should have been told to his son.
Yeah.
Early. Mm. When, don't go, son. Here's why we're doing all this. Here's why I'm motivated the way I am. Let me help you understand. What he needed to do then was go, okay, you're nuts. You're nut job. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so vampires, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And my faith doesn't believe in him. Or say something like that. I mean, and so...
My faith only believes in jinn.
That's it.
And there's a lot of rules about that.
Yeah, and you followed none of them, so...
You're right. Yeah, they definitely could have done more with the sheriff, but I did appreciate anything. What they did. You know, so when he did show up at the church, that was amazing. And his reaction as a complete outsider and the horror of his son tearing away from him and going and drinking that cup, that was very affecting.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also, so speaking of like really moving moments, the juxtaposition of what Riley is experiencing his death as.
Yes.
And then cutting to the screaming.
That was very effective.
And the fire, it was so good.
Mm.
It was so jarring.
That was jarring.
Like, oh yeah, this is horrifying. Mm-hmm.
But I loved the effect.
It was great.
Because it was instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also was sitting there going, oh crap, are you sitting on something fireproof? Is the fire going to be
don't worry,
in the boat?
It's a wooden boat.
Kick him out of the way, man. Kick him out of the way.
Yeah.
No, and I don't want to say I didn't like, there were a lot of wonderful moments. And like I say, there were a lot of the themes that I still want to bring up. But I'm like, overall, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I think also maybe you're just not a Mike Flanagan fan, and that's fine too. I am still going to watch his other stuff. The Fall of the House of Usher, which he just did, was his last show with Netflix. I think he had a 5-show deal.
Huh.
And now he's with Amazon. He's also...
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
I heard it on this podcast. So this podcast was recorded February 23. So also, this was not out when the Catholic Answers thing was recorded. It was like 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
Closer to when Midnight Mass came out.
Right.
Or else I'm sure they would have listened to that and like had a lot of that in there.
Yeah.
And this is not going to be with Amazon, but he is at some point doing the Dark Tower series.
There you go.
Well, okay. I've read a bunch of Stephen King, but I have not read the Dark Tower series. I don't know why. I just haven't been that interested in it.
I read the first book and I said, this book's kind of gross. There's a lot of body stuff in here and I don't like it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's gotten more.
But it's interesting because there's apparently a lot of crossover between the Dark Tower series and Salem's Lot.
Yeah, well, I've heard that there's actually a lot of little nuggets of many of his other books sort of being pulled together in some strange universe or something like that, you know, pulling it all together. That's what I've heard about the series anyway.
Yeah, it's like trans-dimensional. So, so like someone from... this woman from like New York City gets pulled into this other universe, I want to say, this other world where the main guy in the Dark Tower series is. And yeah, so it's like there's back and forth like that. So I think that's how there's crossovers.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that they pointed out in that Catholic Answers podcast that I liked that we missed last week was, you know, in Aaron Green's talk about death, how naturally, you know, when she was talking about the baby, how naturally, you know, it was accepted that that was a person. And I think that was a beautiful thing that we missed, or I missed anyway.
Yeah, I missed that too.
Yeah.
And the baby would be named and your name is important. And I was like, that is.
Yeah.
Definitely. For sure. So one of the other things that Erin did while she was dying was she clipped the wings of that angel or that vampire, right? And she was talking about that earlier. Her mom used to clip the wings of these birds.
Didn't connect that at all.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was good. And she was sacrificing herself in a way for everybody else too. Everybody in the world, not everybody that was right with her.
That's the thing.
She knew what she was trying to do. Yeah.
And I love the point that, you know, and this is also a commentary on Father Paul and everybody else who's getting in on this willingly. Annie Flynn, got her name right, Riley's mom, at the end was like, what is this for? What are these knives for? You know, we believe that there's a God and heaven, and then we scrabble for a few more minutes on earth. Like, why do we do that? And Aaron said, you know, this isn't about us anymore.
We're doing it for everyone else.
This is for the entire world now. And so a few minutes could make a big difference. But Annie's right. This priest is like, I don't want to die. And it makes me think of The Simpsons when the hurricane hit Ned Flanders' house. And Maude Flanders is like, it was terrifying. I thought I was headed for the eternal embrace of our Lord. And you're like, why do we think about death like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was Father Paul's whole deal. He brought death to everybody on the island because he couldn't handle his own death.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's when he tells that story about the waterfall in South America, and every drop was like a deluge of death, and this must be how God feels looking at it. So sad.
So he's going to help God out with this, really.
Well, that's exactly. He's always going to do God's job for him because God's not big enough.
Unbelievable.
And that was the thing because...
Well, and who are you to decide that that makes God sad?
Well, here's the thing. Because what he's doing is he's thinking God is like him. And therefore, he is like God. He can do what God does because God's like him. And I'm just like, oh man, you are a terrible priest. You really need to go back.
And he's always been preoccupied with death because that's, he talked about how his sister died when he was 8. And he's like, that's what led me to God, to try to make sense of it. Also, the thing about thinking that he's just like, God thinks the way he does. This is what I always say when I see people that like let their chickens inside their house.
Oh.
Now there are little chicken diapers. That's also terrible.
That's a lot of work.
That's also terrible.
I'm too lazy.
It's also not fixing the entire problem of cleanliness inside your house.
Exactly. Like,
there are no birds in my house. No. Absolutely not.
No. Mm-mm.
And
but continue, I'm always please. Like,
what was it about seeing the chicken that made you think, we're really similar, and I bet we want the same things. The chicken doesn't want to be in your house.
He wants to be in good grass and some bugs and, you know, a dust bath.
Yeah. So, like, for his understanding of God to be like, pretty similar to me, I guess.
Well.
That's funny.
Yeah. Father Paul was one of the most interesting characters, though. I liked Riley a lot because he was a truth seeker, and he wouldn't lie to himself because he'd had practice in facing what he'd done and learning not to lie to himself.
And he wouldn't lie to anybody else, even when it was hard.
Right.
Mm. He knew what Katie wanted. Kate is her real name. He knew what Aaron wanted to hear about what do you think what happens when we die. Yeah. And he knew that it was going to cause a problem that he didn't really believe in the faith anymore or in God at his house with his parents, but he always told the truth.
Yeah. And I really loved that about his character and that he was struggling so much. And that he was finally giving in to the process of, you know, community of the AA meetings. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh man, Joe didn't make it. Oh no. And he was really troubled for him. And before that, he didn't care about him one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he was a genuine, fully fleshed character. And the priest, the more we went on and the more ranting that was happening and this stupid plan of no one in their right mind thinks this is a good idea. So this is where you just have to take the leap of disbelief, you know, and go with it. But
and I wonder, you know, we know that he wasn't a good priest the whole time. I mean, probably before this too, but in that stuff, I was thinking, okay, he's under the influence, right?
Of the vampire, because he can hear his voice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because everybody was when they became vampires. You know, they went nuts and they were doing stuff. I killed my wife. You know, so you know, I feel like that explains that to me that he was under the influence of what was happening. Yeah,
it's addiction.
So I think that he. So I don't think the other people could hear the voice of the vampire yet, because Father Paul said to Riley, you will start to hear it. Like, eventually you'll start to hear it, and that's good, too. But he did make it sound like the thing was forming a plan that he was following.
Yes.
Which also was baffling. I was like, I just had come about what this plan is, because I'm like, what kind of a plan is it that just raises up a bunch of people like you who are going to eat all the available food? I don't understand why this is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, that's what's strange. Like, if you look at the way the monster was, it was conserving food. When they went into its lair, actually, that was one of the most horrifying things.
It was gross.
Yeah.
Those people were tied up.
Yeah.
They had been kept alive.
Right.
And it only killed, like, two people.
Yeah.
Before this whole thing happened. And you can't make everybody into a vampire because then there's no food. Come on.
That was my point.
But well, they had planned the next morning to go over the ocean, right? To go to the mainland.
That was the plan. Yeah, they were going to start spreading.
But then they're going to be vampires.
They're going to do the same thing there. I mean, you know, it's going to be a few months and everybody's a vampire.
Well, right. And I wonder if really the priest was only... Of course, the priest had to have not a very good understanding, because he also was sticking his ideas of God and angels and everything in there. I don't feel like that vampire was that smart, especially once
I
thought it was. And then I saw the way it was acting when it was feeding. Like, you could shoot at it and it's like, I want to eat, you know? And I'm like, so this is the ultimate addiction.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm an apex predator and your gun can't hurt me, so just go away.
And she's slitting his wings later. Mm-hmm. And he kind of picks his head up and she's like, no, here you go, back to my neck. Just like, okay. And so basically it's run by its animalistic needs.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody on that island is also, I mean, there are some people who've got the moral backbone to kind of think of what's going on and not just let themselves be taken over by it, which is Riley's parents. But you think about Sturge, who at first you're just like, why is he letting himself be bled like he's an, you know, a meltdown or something? Yeah. And then later at the end, like I was saying with Howard, he's like, well, because I want him to be safe too. He was nice to me, this and that. And that's when you go, oh, not that smart enough.
I was just thinking of the moment when, I was just thinking of the moment when Ed and Annie met each other after they were looking for each other, where they were both vampires. And she says, the blood is all mine. And he says, mine too. You know, I didn't kill anybody.
That was the only thing they cared about. It was so sweet.
Yeah, I loved it. Really nice.
Also, the best thing in the Midnight Mass was Ed Flynn's face as he's like, they would cut to reaction shots for him when the priest was talking and he's looking around like, what? Excuse me?
And his wife is still kind of unsure about it. And he's grabbing her and going, nope, we're getting over the wall.
hang on. Was that letter Riley wrote correct? Good night.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. He's like, oh, he wasn't insane. Fine. Well, and I was thinking about that going, that whole scene of chaos like that. And I know, I mean, I don't know how much you know about Jonestown. Rose read a book about it. And so she was telling me all the inner details, but I remember being home from college. Maybe I'd have to look at the timing, but it was during the summer whenever Jonestown happened. And my family was getting these news reports on the TV, which was on most of the time in our house. And we were just standing there transfixed because we were totally flummoxed. This didn't make any sense. We could not comprehend what we were hearing. This, the drinking Kool-Aid, killing all these people, you know, this huge cult in South America, all these things. And I'm watching this going, oh, they're all acting like Jonestown, though. They're literally almost passing out Kool-Aid. It's this poison in glasses thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so he took Dracula, which he did not read carefully enough. And the Jonestown idea, which was really clever because you're just going, not the kids. And the parents are going, sure thing. Chug away, kid. You know.
Well, there was at least one kid that was just like, all right. And the parent was like, no, what are you doing?
Okay, don't listen to him. And then, of course, and then Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did Mike Flanagan mention Salem's Lot in that interview?
I'm trying to.
Or Stephen King.
I'm just curious because there's so many similarities.
Stephen King is super influential to him.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of work with Stephen King.
Okay.
But I can't remember if he mentioned Salem's Lot specifically. Yeah. I don't think he did.
But that thing with the dog dying at the beginning, other than showing us that that's how you act to that poison, the only reason to do that is there's a similar instance in Salem's Lot where there's a dog that's got like white spots over its eyes. And the Renfield of that book.
Yeah, he was poisons a graveyard the dog.
Because there's old superstition that vampires can't be around a dog like that.
Oh, okay.
And we were we kept waiting for, is there more of a reason than Joe Colley said? Because this is so clearly an homage to that bit of the book and everything. And I was looking around online and everybody kind of expressed that connection and also kind of like, but what was it for? We didn't, you know. So
I think it was down to the number of survivors even. We had Ben Mears and the young man, I can't remember his name, Richie or something like that. Those were the only two survivors in Salem's Lot. And in this one, you know, you just have the two in the boat.
Yeah.
And it was a nice moment to look at the difference of the doctor's theory, because she was completely scientific, versus vampire lore. Which is when the master vampire who's made you dies, then you're set free from the curse. So when the ashes are coming down, I'm like, well, are these ashes from the vampire in the sky, or are they ashes from the people on the island? And then she says, as soon, he's looking at it and she puts her hand over his, and then Lisa says, I can't feel my legs anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so the curse is gone.
It died.
I really did love Annie's moment with Bev.
Me too.
Bev, you are not a good person.
I could have taken more of a monologue then.
Oh, that was good stuff.
Same here. I love that she's like, well, if Riley's any indication of the value of the caliber of his parenting, and she's like, yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Proudly.
He sure was. And also, God loved him as much as he loves you.
Oh, and the look on Bev's face.
And why do you hate that? Why does that bother you so much?
Yes. Oh, beautiful.
And you're not a victim, even though you try to make yourself one. And I'm like, I would like to know more about this, but never mind. Where's my mom now?
And I liked Bev's actions at the end, too. At the very end, when she was getting ready to die, and she was the only one on that whole place that was losing it. Totally afraid of dying. Yeah.
Yes, and there was something that I saw somewhere, because I was looking around, that was saying really they felt the big theme of the whole thing was giving and receiving forgiveness.
Mm. Yeah.
And what is your mental state and your internal orientation to it in terms of can you do that either way? Because the receiving the forgiveness is not really necessary as giving the forgiveness, you know, because that's what sets you free.
Yeah.
Riley has to forgive himself. That girl does at the end when he's dead. But the father, you know, apologizes.
Yeah.
And he's like, and it doesn't matter that Riley doesn't say anything. He knows he did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bev never forgives anyone for anything. I mean, she down to the very end. Well, look at Riley. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe you're saying that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. And then also, when Sheriff Hassan gets shot and he's like, y'all getting hungry? And she's like, dirty blood. And I love the reaction to that when he like kind of laughs and he's like, oh my God, like really now? Good job. You got it in right at the end there.
I know.
You're
just
still
like,
horrible.
I know. Because I was just going, I know there are people like this because you see evidence of it. I mean, the Gaza thing and all the stuff, the October 7th attacks and all kinds of stuff all the time. And I'm just looking at this going, this can't be real. But I know people are like that.
It's so upsetting. There are people like that. And I love that Ali was the first one to drink
poison. He leapt up.
And then he was like, this is bad. And actually, we don't ever see him eating anybody. I'm not sure.
He didn't have any blood on him.
Yeah, I don't think he did. I think he was like, ooh, this was a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that he was the one that
helping his dad
threw it all on the fire.
And
then what about Dr. Sarah spitting out the blood?
That was good.
I was so glad
that was a good thing too.
I was like, okay, I'm just like, you just had your moment, your glorious moment of saying we are wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Father Paul did, and then he's walking in going, the church is open for all, and he's walking inside, and I'm like, great, he's seen it. He's going to follow through. No, he's trying to turn Sarah into a vampire because he wants her to live. And I'm like, until the sun comes up so she can go up in flames horribly? Now, I get that he wasn't thinking, but, and this is a point Rose made. Rose said, but he is who he is. He has lived this weak way trying to control things and not facing reality his whole life that we've ever heard of.
Mm. Yeah.
His moment of clarity. But he reverts to who he is in a moment of crisis. And
the look on his face when Sarah spits out the blood,
that was wonderful.
He's like, I really can't control anything. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, all the actors in this movie were very good, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Very good cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was kind of surprised that, what was her name? Sarah's mother.
Mildred,
thank you. Once she kind of woke up and she's just sitting with Father Paul holding his hand, she's never really talking about anything except their regrets, which she said, because she was the strong one when she said, he said, I wish you had come to me and said, let's run away. And she's like, I couldn't ruin four people's lives.
Yeah, she was like, I was never going to do that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, but she's not expressing the stuff she did when she went to the church and left and went, don't you ever go back there. That was my moment when I went, I love the mothers in this. I loved her.
Mm-hmm.
Annie, of course, at the end was great. But I especially loved, who was the guy who was tied up in the old house, the drug dealer?
Oh, his mother. His mom was
with
great.
The sheriff. She's like, look, I know nobody likes him, and I get it, but guess what? It keeps food on the table, and I'm sorry he's got to do it, but he's taking care of his family, and this is my son. You're supposed to be here for everybody. You get out there and look for him.
He's like, she's like, yeah, I know you don't like him. That's not supposed to matter.
Yeah, exactly. No, she was fighting like a tiger, and I loved it.
We were watching it, and Mark was like, get it, small-time character actor.
Yeah. No, she really did it great.
Yeah, she was good. I know. It was her time to shine. Mm-hmm. Really good. I mean, that's for sure on her audition reel.
Yeah, and the mothers were all fighting in the ways that they had available.
And Erin lost her baby, but then she was fighting for the world.
Yes.
She was still being that mother, which is amazing because she was fighting against her own mother, who was a terrible mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at this and you think about, you know, Midnight Mass, of course, you think of Black Mass, a Black Mass when you see it. And of course, the whole show is going that way. It is taking the good things God has given us and perverting them for evil use and selfish use. And one of the things was you have a woman who's pregnant. Now, she had a husband and everything, but for her it's a miraculous thing.
Yeah.
And it spurred her on to do things in her life she would never have done, and then that baby is taken away.
Yeah. Mm.
And so this is also the perversion of something good that the church gives us, which is the Virgin Mary saying yes and bearing Christ to us in human form.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting for the whole world with the serpent under her foot. When they show her often in statues, of course, she's on the world and she has the serpent under her foot being crushed. And so even though this director is clearly still an atheist, the Catholic stuff, there's something about that Catholic stuff. It still runs deep if you don't like it.
That's what I was thinking too, because he and Kate, his wife, were both raised Catholic.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well, because they're, even though he's talking about the molecules and the blah, 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 he also believes in the power of redemption, the power of sacrifice, the power of love, the power of forgiveness, the power of regret, wanting to do better, like Riley did, knowing you did wrong and needing to acknowledge that. These are all rooted in Catholic and Christian and any kind of denomination like that, true morality and connection to Jesus Christ. All the religions before that did not have it. And again, I think I've recommended this before, but that book Dominion by Tom Holland spells it out. And this just showed it to me again. I was like, I feel like some of the unmoored feeling for me is the fact that he won't commit to one solid anchor.
I definitely see that. he definitely does lean on all of those things, though, which makes sense for someone who's in recovery. And then you could also see that shift in his work when he had kids.
That does it a lot.
You could see that there was more hope and there was more love. And he also, in this interview, he talked about how Stephen King, I think, said, you can't have horror without love. And he's like, it's true. Like, otherwise, it's just all terrible.
Otherwise, it's just the Tommyknockers. Not that there might not be love in it, but that was so sad and depressing, that book. And, of course, he was going through his own problems at that time. But, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because the horror is the reverse of the love. And it's, and the people, when we read books or watch the shows or whatever, we're watching people fighting for the good.
Yeah,
without
and that's why
that, there's nothing.
Annie's death was so amazing. As soon as Bev was like, she's stalling for time, go around the back. And she's like,
I know what will draw you.
Because when, as soon as she brought the knife out and Bev was like, that better not be for us because that's not going to work. And she was like, it's not. And I was like, yeah, I know exactly what it's for.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I love it. Is there any other themes you wanted to bring up? I think you said you had a few. I think we may have hit them all.
Well, we've hit a lot of them. I do want to say we already should have known, and the whole town should have known, there was something wrong with Bev because she seems to have memorized the book of Revelation.
Yeah, that's never
good. And able to quote that's from it continually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty,
dark and twisted in a lot of ways.
Speaking of shocking accuracy, this show says Revelation and not Revelations.
Yeah, that's true.
Just
that's
something that's almost everybody gets
wrong. Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I would say one other thing. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I just said good. Go for it.
Yeah, thing was when that final monologue that we all agree was just beautifully put, but just so wrong. And she's like, there is no self. There is no me. There is no you. There is no. And I was like, there's the opposite of Christianity. Mm-hmm. You can try and make this all sound nice. But one of the things that people are most afraid of about death is they won't be themselves anymore. Their self will be lost and gone.
Yeah.
And so,
which probably seems fine if you've just been through what Aaron Green has been through.
Right.
For most people, that's not what they're into.
Yeah, but I look at who will flip that kind of comment off at you because she's an atheist and say, oh, when I die, I'll just dissolve and that'll be fine. But I've seen her several times, very ill, terrified. Absolutely terrified because now it's real. Mm-hmm. And that would not be what she's asking for because the self is what's so important. God created each one of us to be our unique selves. And the fact I won't dwell on the atheist thing anymore, but the fact that Christianity celebrates that, it celebrates communities. We're not just individuals, but it celebrates each particular person, which is why Mother Teresa was out dragging people out of the gutter. It didn't matter to her if they were only going to live an hour or two.
Yeah.
She was going to treat each person that way. And that's the real difference in that show because Father Paul doesn't care about those people either. He cares about only himself.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't say there's not a self, but the self matters in all these examples in the show. So that final conclusion is completely incorrect and it's kind of that Eastern religion, kind of the Buddhist thinking of, we all go into the great knowledge or the universe or whatever it is.
Sure, nirvana, which is, a lot of people misunderstand to be a type of paradise, but it is just you not existing.
Yeah.
And I've seen this before in people that are very old that have never, ever come to terms with themselves. They've never lived the way they thought they should or the way they wanted to. And, they can be so old, like Monsignor Pruitt was.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, how are you still running from death this hard? But it's because they feel like they never did anything they were supposed to or they wanted to. And they feel like they wasted their life. And they're like, no, I just need to be able to go back, which, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, well, at this point, your life is pretty terrible. So why do you want to keep hanging on to it? But I've seen people who are 90 years old, not having a good time of it, haven't been having a great time of it for like 20 years now. And they're like, I want to live to be 100. And you're like, I don't think you do want to live to be 100. What you want out of life is nothing you're going to get in 10 more years of life.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what he found out. He got more time and he found out he couldn't do any of the stuff he wanted to do with it.
Mm-mm.
Because you can't go back. You can't change it.
Yeah. And to go on from that, which is interesting the reason everybody's terrified of death is because death is not natural. This is what the church will tell us, right?
Sure.
So, and we know it from the story of the fall and Genesis and everything. Something else was supposed to probably happen, but it wasn't supposed to be that. And so it's a natural instinct to be afraid of death. And that's why Christians, I'm not looking forward to the act of dying, but I don't mind the act of, once I'm dead, I'm like, great. Because I know what's waiting.
Hmm. Right.
And it's a lot more than what Aaron said. But even if all you're thinking is that it's what Aaron said, that is something to look forward to and go forward for. And so the Christians and the ones that were gathered in the town square who kind of got come to their senses a little and are singing, "Nero, my God, to thee," like people going down on
the Titanic
ship. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which was a beautiful image on the island. I really, that actually brought me to tears. It was really,
it was so amazing. And yeah. I got to say, only having like 120 people, the choir they had.
Those people that harmonized the heck out of stuff.
Yeah.
Very good.
But, but those people also had the faith that said, "This is coming, but I'm not afraid. Somebody will be there to meet me. It will be all
right."
Everyone
but Bev.
Well, yeah, because Bev had never come to terms with her faith. Mm-hmm. She completely depended on herself and controlling everybody else. And she'd never allowed herself to be weak or vulnerable or all those things.
Yeah. Then you have to be before God.
Oh, because God's not us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
he is in charge, and you can't control it.
No. And the thing that makes that tolerable, because a lot of people would say, is that he loves us so much more than we even love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees what we need more than we can even see it ourselves, so that in the end, when we're going through things or just enjoying a wonderful moment, you know, of realizing God's presence, we become reconciled to the idea that here's who we are in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
It's like a 3-year-old.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So the same people who are like, "Oh, that's horrible. I don't want to be controlled my whole life." Well, that is how a toddler feels. But when you look at it, you're like, well, you can't see that your parents are right and that what they're doing is good for you.
Yes.
And nobody feels like that's an overstep or like that's injustice or, you know, but you're not letting these toddlers have a self.
Yeah. Right.
It's just that nobody wants to think about themselves as there's something so much higher than us that we can't understand what's good for us all the time. And what you were saying about death, that like, who wants to prolong life at that point? I mean, at a certain point for everybody, who wants to prolong life?
Yeah.
Just makes me think of Futurama when Bender, they went to that Egyptian planet. And he was like, they were like, "You really thought you'd need all this stuff in the afterlife?" And he was like, "In afterlife, if I thought I'd have to live another life, I'd kill myself right now."
One of my favorite lines. Futurama, I quoted.
I know that, and then when the other Pharaoh died, and he was so sad, and he was like, "He's whipping angels now."
Oh shoot! Oh, yeah. Yeah, I read a good book called "Being Mortal" by Atul Gawande, and I've mentioned it here before.
Yeah, so good. I read it, and I forced Mom to read it
and the book club,
and my whole book club.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, but that case of that he outlines at the very beginning with. Treating this elderly person and not really having paid attention to what it is that they wanted, it's like, turns out they wanted to take their family to Disneyland or whatever. Rather than do that, you're doing medical care that actually takes them down, but prolongs their life. Just thinking about that stuff at end of life is something that I hope to do anyway.
Oh, yeah. I made a list, a bullet point list that I keep in the folder where I have my mom's, living will and all the paperwork that I need whenever she goes to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, we haven't gotten to that point yet, but when we do, I'm going to have the thing, what matters most? What's the one thing that you really want to be able to do or life's not worth living? I mean, the questions are put better than that, but I'm like, yeah, because this is what gives the person their dignity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You matter, and how we use this time matters.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's a great book, and you should put it in notes along with Dominion.
When I go, I'm taking all the vampires with me.
Oh, Scott, you're wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. I do it for everybody.
Well, yeah. You, Riley, Aaron, the whole gang.
I love it. Well, this has been a ton of fun. Is there anything else you'd like to say about this masterpiece?
No. Well, agreed, seconded. Motion carried.
Damn it. Quorum.
That's right. This is like when in Russia, the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, and like Bolshevik means majority, and they were actually in the minority, but they were the majority in the room when they decided to move the parties.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it. Well, thanks so much to both of you for watching this and talking. This was a ton of fun.
It was so fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's great. That's great. So what is coming up next?
And again.
I think we have werewolves next.
Yes. Now we're going way back. Alexandre Dumas, the wolf leader. And it's actually not really werewolves.
Oh, okay.
That's what the title makes it sound like. What it really is kind of more like Faust.
Oh, okay.
Very good. It deals with the devil. There are wolves, plenty of wolves involved.
There are wolves, but they're not the were kind.
Yeah.
Very good.
So this is a book that was kind of recently rediscovered and translated into English. And,
okay.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very good. It's fun. It's our old book of the year.
I've got it. I'm ready to roll on it.
Excellent.
I will get her done. Yes. Fun. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. And thanks for listening to all the listeners out there.
Yes. We'll talk in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.